IVM.
Welcome to episode 91 of the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast, and it's the first episode of 2020. This is DJ, your host from London, and I've got with me both Ashwin and Varun. Guys, how's it going? Happy New Year, firstly. Ashwin, how are you doing, man?
Excellent, man. Happy New Year. Nice break. It is odd after doing this show once a week for a year and a half, almost 2 years now. The week off was a little disconcerting, so I'm a little nervous to get back into it, but I'm excited.
Yeah, I was saying that as well. I mean, we're in our nervous 90s, and also it's the first episode of the year. We've had a couple of weeks off, and there are those butterflies in the stomach coming back, right? It's almost like going out to bat for the very first time. Varun, have you had a nice holiday? I believe you were in India. How's that all going?
Yeah, it's all good. Happy 2020 to everyone. And I'm taking this in the taxi on the way from the airport just so that DJ doesn't have material against me for the next episode.
Jet set lifestyle, man. Awesome, awesome. But yeah, guys, happy new year. And it was a great 2019. 2020, unfortunately for India, didn't get off to a real start, really, because we had the first T20 against Sri Lanka to be played today. And that was... It was washed out without a ball being bowled. I mean, there's a few things to talk about there. We can't really, like, there was no actual play. But there are a few things that have come out of that. Firstly, the ground. Ashwin, I don't know whether you got a chance to watch the build-up to the game, because there was no actual game, but there were some really strange kind of drying techniques being used there. They had a hairdryer out. They had a steam iron out. They even had a vacuum cleaner out at one stage. And we've talked a lot about ground and covering ground and all of that last year when you guys were here for the World Cup and the New Zealand game was washed out. But was that a little bit strange for you?
Yeah, it was incredibly strange and it was disappointing. I mean, for me, Sunday morning, 8:30, we're, you know, back to work tomorrow in a big way. So I was so excited to watch the T20 this morning. I woke up early and of course didn't end up materializing, but really disappointing. And one of the things I think VVS Lakshman was saying in the build-up in the Hotstar studio was, this should never have happened. It should never have gone wrong like this. It's one thing to say the outfield is wet, but the pitch being wet means it was likely human error, right? It means the cover they had on there, in the process of trying to take it off, water dripped through and leaked onto the pitch. So hugely problematic. I think they worked hard. They tried to do everything they can to, dry it, like you said, vacuum and steam iron and hair dryers and everything they could to do, but obviously didn't do a good enough job getting the pitch to internationally ready standards, even for a 5-over game. So disappointing. You know, Guwahati doesn't get a ton of T20 international games, so you'd really have hoped they stepped up and were able to deal with the pitch, because it stopped raining an hour and a half or 2 hours before they had to call it off. But anyway, it is what it is.
Yeah, no, seriously disappointing, given the full house that came out there, man. I mean, incredibly disappointing for the play, for the spectators that actually made it to the ground. Of course, we were all watching, and lots of our listeners have written in as well, saying they were already, there were people in Australia kind of staying up past midnight and stuff. So really, really disappointing. Yes, I mean, I don't think there's much more to be said about that, really. It was just a damp start to the year 2020 for India, so it can only go up from here. But a couple of interesting things happened, and not sure we really need to speak much about them, but the first thing, that Bumrah would have been back and Rohit was rested, and that the Rahul and Shikhar debate seems to be continuing. Varun, do you have anything to add to that? I mean, obviously Rohit is a given in the T20 side, but Kohli seemed to indicate that either Rahul or Shikhar are still in the mix for 2020. Is he just keeping his options open, or is that actually true? Is Shikhar a real contender for 2020, the World Cup itself?
I think Shikhar is definitely, at this stage on 6th Jan, he's definitely a contender. But he has to do something special, in my opinion, because Rahul seems to have cemented his place in the last 1 or 1.5 months. So I think Shikhar is still very much a part of the mix. And you can't take away the fact that Shikhar's record in ICC tournaments, he just comes alive then. So I'm sure Kohli knows that. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with Dhawan.
Plus the left-hand-right-hand combination, right? Of course, Shikhar would add that. But that's, as you say, a story to be told over the course of 2020. But the other very interesting thing, there hasn't been much Indian cricket. There's, of course, been lots of other cricket going on and lots of other stuff being talked about. But one of the most interesting things I thought was the discussion about a 4-day test. Now, Ashwin, I know you're a big follower of the test game, and I mean, we all actually love test cricket. They're going to discuss a proposal, the ICC are going to discuss a proposal about cutting down test matches to 4 days. Now, Joe Root has come out in support of this. Josh Butler has come out in support of this, saying test cricket must change if it is to survive, etc. But King Kohli, the man that everybody listens to about test cricket and who seems to believe that test cricket is the main form of the game, the purest form of the game, has said that he doesn't want it to change. So Ashwin, let's hear what you have to say about test cricket being a 4-day game.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I was thinking about this before we started recording. And I think the purist in all three of us and everybody who we talk to on social media and who we engage with the game thinks, why should we change? The game changes so much. T20 didn't exist 15 years ago. And, you know, so why are we forcing change just for the sake of the calendar? I think, surprisingly, for somebody like me who likes and watches a lot of test cricket, I've been watching the England-South Africa series and Australia-New Zealand. I'm surprisingly not that opposed to the idea, and I might get some hate on social media from this, but more than 60% of matches are finishing within 4 days. There's a crazy logistical organizational nightmare to arrange for a fifth day that doesn't happen. I mean, even if you think about the broadcast and all the staff and the camera folks and everything being planned for 5 days and not using all 5 days. And then finally, of course, the calendar. It's a busy calendar. We want to have franchise leagues. We want to have test cricket. We want to have ODIs and ODI World Cups, et cetera. So there's a lot of work to be done. I want to get more into the numbers and understand a little more about how many games would have, you know, how can we figure out how things would have been different if games were restricted to 4 days and how it changes strategy, et cetera. But I think it's the right thing for a sport to be looking at it. And again, remember, it's the year 2020. And 15 years ago, people were up in arms about a 20-over format, right? And now look at what the IPL, franchise cricket, 20-over format has done to the game. So people across all sports are always resistant to change. I think it's good that they're assessing it. I hope they don't take a hasty call and jump to it just for the sake of the calendar, but I'm open to the idea.
I'm totally opposed to the idea. So it's interesting to have a different view, but I think that a 4-day test is not going to solve anything. For people who think that the game is finishing earlier, I think you've got a bigger issue if games are finishing in 3 days. There's probably a lot of pitch and home conditions that need to be talked about and solved rather than making it shorter. And for the games that go on, sometimes 5 days also seems not enough. And the second thing is, personally, I'm not a fan of these bilateral ODI or T20 series anymore. And so to cut these tests short to fit in more bilateral ODIs, it just feels like I don't think we need more of that. But just my view.
Ashwin, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I actually do agree on the second part. I do agree the bilateral ODIs aren't adding too much value. I think we need to continue carving out more time for the franchise game, for international T20s. And I do think the test championship hopefully will keep a little bit of the kind of stakes and drama alive in test cricket as well. My only point of view is, like, until the World War II, I think, until the 1940s, every test that was played was timeless, right? So it just kept going. And sometimes tests ended when the team had to catch the ship back to their home country. And it was all sorts of things. So 5 days is just what we've had for the last 80 years and we're used to it. I'm just saying, if we look at all the numbers and there's a logical, rational argument as to the benefits of getting the one extra day back, I think they should consider it. And I think it's healthy that the sport is considering or constantly evolving to stay relevant, because otherwise it'll become obsolete.
Wow, I didn't know the test matches were timeless. In that case, I think Lakshman and Dravid would still be batting in 2020.
Pretty much, man.
Yeah, so Ashwin, let me ask you, I'm actually in the Varun camp here quite firmly, in the sense that I'm a... I'd like test matches to stay for five days. And the questions I have for you, because I mean, I totally get the point about being open and open to change and adapting to survive and all of that stuff. But is the shortening of the game, because it's being sold as a workload management thing, it's being sold as we're going to free up the calendar. But it's the point that Varun brought up. And for me, it's actually not the meaningless ODIs and bilaterals, but is it being pushed? Is the agenda being pushed so that we can fit in more BBL games, more IPL games? Is it going to be more T20 cricket that takes over the extra days? Because you know what human nature is, right? They see a gap in the calendar, they're going to try and shove some stuff in there. So that is the first question that I have for you. And that is on, is it actually going to manage players' workloads? And I'll come to the second question after you've answered the first one.
Yeah, I don't think it's actually to manage players' workloads. I think you're right. They'll squeeze something else in there. But again, like, I'm going to get hate for this. I know I'm going to. But as you think about the length of season we have for franchise cricket, for the IPL or the BBL today, right? Every other major sport in the world spends the vast majority of its time on franchise-based competition. And then internationals come up once in a while, whether you look at the soccer from or football across Europe to basketball, hockey in the US, all of them are franchise-based with internationals coming in less frequently. So I'm not saying I want cricket to go there. I'm just saying if the IPL window goes from 6, 7, 8 weeks to 9 weeks or 10 weeks in the future, that's not the worst thing in the world, right? Because we know that's a tournament that is here to stay and is going to continue growing. So I agree with you. I don't think it's for workload management. I think it's for the calendar and that they can squeeze in more of the stuff that sells.
So are we then open to, so, and this is not the second question I was going to ask you, are we then open to cutting down test cricket to fit in more T20 games, which is what it sounds like we're saying?
I'm not saying that, right? I want there to be enough test matches. My point is you do a three test match series, 5 days a game, 3 day minimum between games. Often they take 4 or 5 days. So a three test series, that's what, 25, 26 days. If you do a 4 day test match and then 3 days between games, you're immediately shaving off three full days, right? So out of a three test series, being able to cut out 3 days at a time across every test series should enable even you to play more tests or longer series, right? Where you had a three test series, could you make it a four test or a five test series? Those are the kind of things that open up to me. I'm not saying we need to reduce the number of tests.
Interesting. So the second question I was going to ask you was, do you think this will lead to deterioration in the pitches? And I think Varun alluded to it very briefly, saying home conditions, etc. But I can see the uproar coming where India prepares spinning wickets and you will have results in 4 days in India. But it will be that ball will turn on day one. Now, Varun, maybe I can ask you this question, actually, given that you brought it up initially. Do you think it's going to deteriorate and cause home teams to bring out spinning wickets or seaming wickets or basically substandard tracks to ensure results in 4 days?
Yeah, I hope not. But the reality is, I do believe that. And I don't think I mentioned the word deterioration, but that was on my mind. That I think this is going to happen. You're going to start trying to force a result within 4 days because that's what will keep the game exciting as well. And you never know, you might have games finishing in 1.5, 2 days.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a debate to be had, right? I mean, you'd also worry about the quality of batsmanship. I mean, there is a certain charm to watch, I don't know, AB de Villiers and Faf du Plessis block out against the Australians, just an entire day of just dead batting the ball. There is a charm to it. But anyway, I think the debate will continue. It's here to stay. There will be people on both sides of it, people with very good arguments and stats on both sides of it, so that it's not going anywhere. Perhaps, Ashwin, some closing thoughts from you, because I know I was due to come back to you on that.
No, that's fine. I just want to say, this is not me saying we need to go to 4 day tests, okay? All I was saying is the fact that the ICC is constantly looking at ways to evolve and, you know, assessing different things is a positive sign. I think once there's a full assessment completed, you look at what impact to pitches, impact to strategy, all the different things, then there should be an informed decision. So I'm not saying I'm supportive of the shortening of the game. I'm saying I'm supportive of them assessing it. That's all.
Fair point. And I think the players themselves have probably given some knee-jerk reactions to it. In fact, England, I think, are going to benefit from the fifth day in the current test match that they're playing against South Africa, aren't they? I mean, they batted so slowly today to kind of get into the lead. So a 4 day they'd be batting quite differently, wouldn't they? But I mean, Kohli, we spoke about Kohli a little bit already, and no Edges and Sledges cricket podcast would be complete without talking about Virat Kohli. In this context, I want to bring up this Crick Info poll, because while India hasn't been playing cricket, we've had to find ways to keep ourselves busy, right? So Crick Info has come up with this this bracket, and they've pitted the top players of the decade against each other. And where we've ended up after Shakib beat Rohit Sharma, Shakib, the Bangladeshi captain, Dharma Agai, scored 10 hundreds in 2019, beat Rohit Sharma. And then MS Dhoni beat Shakib in a 50-50 decision where Dhoni had more votes, with Chennai IPL tweeting for him and Soumya Sarkar tweeting for Shakib Al Hasan. So this stuff got very, very serious very, very quickly. And now we've got a situation where the final two players are Virat Kohli, who's kind of just cruised to the final spot, and MS Dhoni for player of the decade. I mean, what are the chances that there will be two Indian players in the final? But guys, I mean, what do you make of all of this stuff where you've got Rohitians versus, are they called Shakabians or Bangla bots? Or what are we calling them? I don't know. Ashwin, maybe talk our listeners through what's going on with this cricket football, because I know you've been following it quite closely.
It's amazing how this has taken all of us over completely, right? Like you were messaging yesterday saying, I can't believe how invested I've gotten in this result. But yeah, bizarre. I think, you know, Shakib has lots and lots of supporters, outstanding cricketer, but it's really interesting to see how this is just a numbers game. And it's frankly amazes me that the whole cricket world has rallied to answer this poll to try to get the result they want. So we'll see how it goes. One run left, right?
Yeah, and who are you backing in that battle between Virat and MSD? Because MSD is leading 70-30 as we record.
Yeah, I'd say my pick for player of the decade has to be Virat. I think he's had an unreal decade, but I think Dhoni's going to win it. That's just because he's got numbers on his side.
Varun, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, Dhoni nearly lost to Shakib, man. How is he ahead of Kohli at this point?
Actually, I can't believe Rohit lost to Shakib, and I can't believe that Dhoni and Shakib were 50-50. But my vote goes with Kohli as well. I think just for the fact that Kohli, as the decade has progressed, has become better and better. And unfortunately, I can't say the same about the other finalists.
So two ICC trophies, two IPLs are not sufficient. I mean, he's the captain of the decade without a doubt. But I mean,
two IPLs is par for the course, man. That's expected. There's nothing to talk about there.
Fair enough.
I mean, out of nine finals, if I remember your quiz correctly, nine finals, the two trophies is not bad.
The question in which you went for the middle answer, which was six, and got it wrong.
Yeah.
Quick learner. Anyway, guys, of course, I'm rooting for MS Dhoni. He's been a fantastic player for India. I mean, but whoever wins, man, like Kohli versus Virat, it's like insane. I don't know why we're even having this conversation. It's because India has not been playing cricket, so Cricinfo people have come up with this plan. They've got a gazillion hits from all over the world, and of course, they've done really well. So we will continue to track that poll closely. Guys, the other couple of things I want to talk about very quickly, and these are just things that we wanted to mention before we went to break. Firstly, Manjrekar actually went on air saying he had a horrible 2019 as a commentator. His analysis was completely off point. He had a meltdown with Harsha Bogle. So I thought that was quite honest and nice of him to actually come out and say that. It takes a lot of guts and honesty to admit that on a public forum that he was wrong. And well done to Manju. Hopefully he's going to have a better 2020. The other thing that happened was Irfan Pathan retired. Now, Varun, I don't know whether you have any particular memories of Irfan Pathan that you'd like to share with our listeners very quickly.
The hat-trick in Pakistan, man, the test match. You can't forget that. That was just
that we lost also. We lost that test match.
That
by like 341 runs or something, if I remember correctly.
But I genuinely did not remember that. But that hat trick match, sometimes they played on Star Cricket. And as you guys know, I just watch Star Cricket on loop quite a bit. It's just fantastic. And to see the team rallying around him and the joy on Irfan Pathan's face. But what I did not remember is that Irfan Pathan was man of the match in the 2007 World T20 final. So, yeah,
wow.
I mean, I totally did not remember that. I read somewhere that he's taken 300 international wickets. I think actually he's had a phenomenal career just in a very short period of time. And it was actually a while ago, which makes you realize how old we are. But I mean, Irfan Pathan was the coolest thing, I think, probably 15 years ago, right? A swing bowler, a left-arm swing bowler, which India hadn't seen for years. And a guy who could really bat to the point where I think Chappell said he should be batting at three for India, which I think was not the right call. But still, he was just cool, man. He was the guy we've been looking for a long time. He was our Manoj Prabhakar.
Or our budget Wasim Akram, depending on which way
you look at
it. But the ball I actually remember from him is the one that got, I think it was Gilchrist, right? It swung in Australia when he was making his debut and stuff. Fantastic stuff. Ashwin, were you going to add something to that?
I know. I was going to say, if you ask me my favorite memory, I would have thought about the hat trick too. But just recently, as soon as he announced his retirement, somebody on social media posted a video of his century in Bangalore, his one test century in Bangalore in 2007, also against Pakistan, actually. And that was unbelievable. I remember I watched that whole clip. It was nine down and he hit a six to bring up his century. Just outstanding. So I think to Varun's point, a great player who probably fell short of his potential for a variety of reasons. But yeah, we wish him well.
Again, Varun briefly alluded to one of the reasons I think he particularly fell short, which was Greg Chappell wanting him to become the all-rounder that India didn't have. But we will move on from that because India now does have a fast-bowling all-rounder and his name is Hardik Pandya. Varun, have you got an update about Hardik Pandya for us, please?
Yes, Hardik Pandya is engaged on, I think, New Year's Eve. I can't remember who his fiance's name is.
Natasha Stankovic.
I'm very bad with these names. By the way, also later in the show, you guys have to tell me how to pronounce Marnus, the Test Centurion's last name, but we'll come to that later. Okay, I'm definitely not going to remember that for next week's episode. But yeah, Hardik Pandya is engaged. I think he got a lot of hate on social media for it. There were all sorts of comments about how he's just gone after a foreign girl. He should have been with an Indian girl and all sorts of stuff. I think it's complete nonsense. I think what I found interesting though is somebody like Hardik Pandya, who shares a lot of details about his love life with his parents, did not share that he's going to propose. And so what I did read was that his parents were also shocked that he proposed. And for all the listeners, I'm sure you know that he shares a lot of details with his parents.
Wo karke aaya.
Definitely karke aaya.
For which Varun has a power ballad, which you should go back to the old catalog of the show to listen to. But on that note, guys, we're going to go to break. Congratulations to Hardik as well as Natasha. Wish them a very happy married life in the future. And guys, we will see you after this break.
Have you ever wondered where the business world is headed? How the ways in which we create, market and sell to consumers will evolve? Or if we'll ever go back to wearing pants while working? For answers to all of this and more, tune into Advertising is Dead with me, Varun Dugirala. Every Tuesday, as I talk to entrepreneurs, leaders and change makers from across business, media, marketing and beyond. You can catch all episodes of Advertising is Dead on the IBM Podcast website, app or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Welcome back from that break, guys, and we're still here on the Agents and Sledges Cricket Podcast. We've got some more stuff to talk about. I mean, there's so much stuff that's gone on since we last recorded. Guys, I know you're both big fans of young players and bringing young players into the team, and two of those people that we've been speaking about lately have been Shubman Gill and Prithvi Shaw. Now, I don't know whether you guys have been following it closely, but the Ranji Trophy games that have been played at this, that are being played at the moment, there have been a couple of incidents that I just wanted to discuss. And I mean, they're slightly serious. So I think from the, it's going to be slight tone change from the first half of the show where Shubman Gill actually has, was given out by the on-field umpire in his game against Delhi. And he started abusing the umpire and showing dissent. And the umpire who was officiating his first class game actually went and changed his decision after speaking to the leg umpire, weirdly. And Shubman Gill batted on. He didn't last very long. He got out eventually for 23. But maybe Varun, I'll come to you on this first, because I know you're a big supporter of young players, bringing them into the team, etc. Gill is also the captain of the India A side. He was a World Cup winner in Prithvi Shaw's team. He was the man of the tournament there. Rahul Dravid has spoken highly of him. Varun, what's gone on with Shubman Gill in this incident where he's had an absolute go at the umpire?
DJ, I really don't know. You know, I like you said, I'm a huge supporter of young talent in the game. And especially when somebody like Gill, like you mentioned, has got so much great, for lack of a better word, PR going for him, so many runs behind him, so much talk about how he needs to get into the Indian team. I feel like you should just, again, maintain a low profile on some of these things, let your bat do the talking, let other people play you up. So for me, it was absolutely shocking that he did that. I mean,
yeah, it's pretty shocking, to be honest, right? Like, it's disappointing more than anything. Shubman Gill is a huge potential talent. People are talking about in being India's next superstar. He's got a ton of runs behind him. He's like, you know, he just has a really strong message out there around him. And so it's exceptionally disappointing that an incident like this on field, you know, you never know if it's because such a young guy got so much early fame and early recognition that, you know, he's a little more stubborn than he probably should be. And anyway, we all grew up with kind of umpire's decision is the final decision being the mantra. I guess with DRS, that's changed a little bit. But really disappointing for Gill to have behaved this way, even if he was correct. It's not worth the negativity it generates around him.
And it did make a lot of news because the game actually stopped for 10 minutes before it restarted. The Delhi captain was really irritated. It was actually Nitish Rana, who we'll talk about a little bit more later in the show. But Ashwin, is it the pressure that these players are put under at a young age that is causing them to behave like that? Because I also want to bring up the Prithvi Shaw. You know, he did that celebration showing his bat and the bat doing the talking just after he came back from his doping ban and stuff. So what is going on with our younger players? And I mean, what would Jamie Sir say about something like this, right?
Yeah, actually, you have to believe he's disappointed. And again, India's now such a powerful cricketing nation, so like the top of pretty much all the different ranks, and sort of break in and be one of the future potential superstars. It doesn't surprise me that it gets to your head, or it may have gotten to their heads, but it is disappointing. I mean, look, I'm all for on-field aggression, having a player who's fired up, who fights really hard on the field. That's why I like a player like Kohli so much. But misbehaving or doing things outside the spirit of cricket, or even outside of what the laws are, which is what Gill did, that's where it starts to get disappointing and cross a line. So it's good to be intense and bring a fire on the field, but you have to, you know, they'll have to manage it and balance it out.
Yeah, very interesting. You mentioned the Kohli example again. So I actually feel that this filters down right from the top, right? And Kohli's obviously had his share of discipline issues, which he's managed to control in his latter years and channel that intensity into a fruitful kind of expression of his talent. But I mean, so I'll tell you how I see this, because obviously there's a lot of pressure on these kids and they are seen as the next big thing in Indian cricket and all of that stuff. But, and you mentioned Kohli, but I think my dad actually used to say something like, there's only one John McEnroe, right? And Kohli is that John McEnroe in our generation, where he is absolutely amazingly talented and he can get away with doing absolutely outrageous things. And I know you're a big tennis fan as well, right? But I mean, if you're winning Wimbledon while screaming at the umpire and doing crazy things like that, no one can actually say anything to you. But until you've done all of that stuff and all you're trying to say is you're being a little bit of a crybaby and saying, I'm actually better than I am. So, I mean, our generation was always kind of taught to just get or keep their head down, score their runs, do their stuff. And that was reflected in the role models we had. We had Rahul Dravid, Anil Kumble, Javagal Srinath, VVS Lakshman, Sachin Tendulkar, even Saurav Ganguly to a certain extent. His aggression was still reined in. And we've now seen a young player who is the captain of the India A side refusing to walk once he's been given out in a domestic match, which, I mean, I think it's going to cost him. He's going to get some demerit points, etc., whatever the system that they've got in there, and that isn't a good look for him. And hopefully, he will learn his lesson from something like that. Even someone like Roger Federer was a bad-tempered youngster, but managed to rein it in, and now you see what a champion is. I mean, I just find it very, very disappointing. The other thing, of course, is Prithvi Shaw has hurt his shoulder and he's been pulled out of his game against Baroda. So that is a little bit worrying. He was on the fringes of the Indian test side as well as probably the limited overs side. He's obviously a daredevils player as well. So that's a little bit of worry for people like us.
But can I just go on one quick tangent since you mentioned tennis and John McEnroe? In slightly more positive news than the negativity, Nick Kyrgios, who's the Australian tennis player who is also known for his on-court outbursts. I saw him play in Cincinnati last year and it was horrific. It was really painful to watch. But anyway, despite that, you know, with all the environmental crisis going on in Australia with the bushfires, etc., he started what I thought was a really cool initiative, which is he just put out on Twitter, he said, for every ace I serve through the Australian summer season, which starts now, he's going to donate $200 to victims of the fires. Now, for context, he hits 16 to 20 aces or a match, I think. And he's going to play a lot of matches this summer. But then what was really cool is not just other Australian tennis players got jumped on that bandwagon, but Chris Lynn has now said for every 6 he hits in the Big Bash, he's going to donate $250. Maxwell has matched that. I think there's a few more now jumping on. So really cool. You know, there are often people who question why don't athletes or people like that with this much money just give money to the victims, which I'm sure they do privately. But I love when causes like this pick up. So kudos to Nick Kyrgios, something I never thought I'd say because I absolutely hate his on-court demeanor. But and obviously for Maxwell Lynn and everybody else who jumped on, it's a great cause they're supporting.
Yeah, that is nice of Nick and the other guys who are on the bandwagon. And of course, our sympathies with the issues going on in Australia at the moment. It's really, really sad to see the damage to forestry as well as the wildfire, as well as the environment, as well as humans. I mean, it's terrible to see. And I mean, our sympathies and prayers are with the guys out there. But so back to the discussion, which was around completely blank. Shubman Gill and his descent, right? And Nick Kyrgios is a good example, right? I mean, you can do all of that stuff, but until you win Grand Slams, you're just treated as a bad-tempered kid throwing a tantrum, right? Don't you think so?
Yeah, absolutely right. I think you have to let your on-court performance do the talking, and hopefully they'll learn it as they get older and more mature.
And so the other guy involved in this incident was Nitish Rana, who's got his own issues at the moment. I mean, he has been pulled up for age fraud at the under-19 level, along with Shivam Mavi. And Manjot Kalra has been banned by the Delhi Cricket Association, the DDCA, for age fraud as well. The guy scored 100 in the last edition of the World Cup. What is going on with our players? I mean, obviously, subcontinental age is an interesting idea. I mean, you've got Shahid Afridi, who's probably still 16 or 19 or whatever he claims to be. But we are producing these players who are going on to play IPL as well as Ranji Trophy cricket, who have basically cheated their way in the under-19 game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what's going on with the Indian situation. So obviously, like you mentioned, Manjot Kalra got banned for a year. I don't know what exactly they're investigating for Mavi and Rana or what they need to do to prove it, etc. But it's disappointing if this is real. You hear it happening at the smaller scales, at the local levels all the time, you know, cheating the system to get a 14-year-old to play the under-13s and a 16-year-old to play the under-15s, etc. But if it's starting to happen at the national level and it's a problem for multiples, that's going to be really sad and disappointing. What I thought is interesting is Manjot Kalra did well in the final of the under-19 World Cup. So the question then becomes, is was that a legitimate victory if he was over the technically allowed age limit? I don't know.
And there's a lot of questions to be asked. I actually played representative cricket for Gurgaon as well as was in the Haryana state camp. And I was actually sent home for being overage, although every certificate I have in my entire life tells me what my age is. So,
really?
Clearly, selection is not merely based on what you do out on the field, man. It's just a way of life. So what can you do? I obviously went on and became a lawyer instead. So clearly a good use of my time. So guys, on that note, talking about cricket and our love for the game and what we did as children, we put out a tweet earlier in the week about the most absurd gully cricket rules. Now, of course, we are One Tip One Hand. We started a blog called onetiponehand.com a long time ago. And I mean, all our social media handles are still One Tip One Hand, although we're called the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast. So we thought we'd have some fun on social media and ask the question as to what the most absurd street cricket rule is, what the most absurd gully cricket rule is. Of course, we got a lot of answers saying One Tip One Hand is an absurd rule, which is why we love it. And the guy who has the bat gets to bat first and gets to bat last and gets to take the bat when he gets out and go home. But Ashwin, maybe you can some of your favorite tweets. I don't know whether you've had a chance to look through some of them, because we got some fantastic and slightly weird answers. Now, I don't know whether they're all safe for they're family friendly and safe for work, but maybe you can read out your favorite ones.
The one you're thinking about, I'm not going to read out, but to the person who posted it, I think they know who they are. But
maybe the IVM guys can actually edit the offending word out. I don't know. Maybe you should read it out. I think it's quite
I'm not
fun.
Reading that one. If you want to read this one at the end, you can do it. Okay. But there were lots of good ones, and I had kind of three favorites that I just highlighted that, you know, brought a ton of memories back as to how cricket used to be played when we were younger. So the first one that I highlighted was from Ajay Parthasarathy, that's @iAjay16, which says if you're out on the first ball, it's a trial ball. If you got hit for a six off the first ball, it's a trial ball. And we've all done that. Sometimes you, I don't even know why trial balls happen, why they exist. Can you imagine if in an international cricket, you could just walk out, Rohit Sharma walk out to open and say, hey, you know what, first one's just a trial, just give me some practice.
But, we just want that in the semi-finals of ICC knockouts.
Yeah, just that's the only time we really truly need
that's it. That's
it. Each batsman gets like six trial balls if they're doing badly. So,
anyway, five overs.
So thanks to Ajay for sending that one in. My second favorite, which I'm not going to use one of the words, but it was from Kunal Tolani @Kunal_JT. He said, if the ball goes into the gutter or drain, the batsman doesn't have to run. It's a free automatic one or two runs depending on the distance. The caveat is the batsman does have to go get the ball out of the drain. And I thought it was funny because Krishna Kumar at Later Cut on Twitter replied saying, ah, the first ball after the dip in the drain, it gave the term perfume ball an altogether different meaning, and it zipped at the batsman. Always great, right? Because of course you got a wet, often greasy, often dirty ball. So thanks
and
to Kunal and Krishna.
Still feel the spray. I know anyone listening to this is feeling the spray of the ball out of the drain.
Well, especially because when you're playing tennis ball cricket, right? It's absorbent. It's so, ugh. It's, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, but why I can feel the spray next to so many drains?
That's a great question.
I don't understand.
Why were there so many gutters and drains around?
Yeah, because we got that a lot. Nali mein ball jayegi to jisne mari hai wo leke hai.
Yeah,
that was like a really common answer. I'm just like, yeah, why are we playing next to all these open drains?
We got a lot of those. And then the third one, which you know was also fun that I wrote down, but was from Ame Singh @Amazing99. Ask on Twitter. This guy with the bat open always. And there's a few of you who sent themes like that. If I have the bat and the ball and I'm out, I'm going to go home and nobody else gets to play. So always fun. Gully Cricket has its completely own set of rules. Keep sending us in more ideas, more answers. There were lots of other people who sent great ones in, including, like you said, many folks sending in one tip, one hand, called one bump, one hand, one bounce, one hand, one something else, one pitch, one
pitch,
hand.
One hand.
Yeah, so all over, but awesome.
One tappa, one hand.
One tappa, one hand indeed.
So we got asked a very interesting question, and Ashwin, you can maybe answer this. He asked the question as to, between the three of us, which one of us would do, it's my bat, my ball, I'm out, I'm going home. I mean, you guys both went home to the same place, right? So you couldn't really do
it. Yeah, it was easy.
Probably shared
us,
a bat as well.
We had one bat, which I think Varun will claim was his, and that's fine. He used it to bat all day against children once anyway, right?
I knew that was going to come up.
We only had the one bat that we shared, yeah. I'm pretty sure of the three of us, he would be the one who would do that. I could definitely see him getting out and just saying, you know what? No, I'm going home. I could also see Varun.
I wasn't ready. That's
yeah,
the other one.
For sure, one is I wasn't ready. Second, I could see him pulling a Shubman Gill and just disputing the umpire's decision and just refusing to walk off. And in fairness to our listeners, he had to drop off, so he's not on the line to defend himself, so it's easy for us to make him a target down.
Yeah, the poor guy's got to go to work. He's had an overnight flight. He's recorded in the taxi home, which sounded a bit like there was a helicopter, actually. Did he take an Uber chopper or something?
Maybe he did,
it sounded like
man.
He was taking off somewhere.
He's a high roller.
Man, he's going to listen to this and he's going to get back.
He's going to be so upset. Anyway, but yes, of the three of us, I would definitely say it's him.
Awesome. So we'll blame the guy who's not there. But guys, that is the wrap on this week's show. It is our first show of the 2020s and the new decade and the new year. We're into the nervous 90s. We're at episode 91. So thank you guys for being on this journey with us all this while. It's been absolutely fantastic. And please, guys, join us for the rest of 2020. It's going to be an absolutely cracking year. There's loads of awesome series coming up. There's an ICC World T20 coming up at the end of the year. So we're already building up to that. Guys, write into us. We're at OneTip100, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Send us an email. We're contact@OneTip1Hand. Leave us a rating or review wherever you listen to us. And guys, we will be back next week. Hopefully, we would have had some cricket by then. So we'll be talking all about that. Thanks very much.
Hello, 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 everybody. It's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On What the Hell, Navya, Jaya Bachchan, Shweta Nandan, and Navya herself dish out stories from their childhood. They discuss tough love between parents and their kids. On Paisa Vaisa, Anupam talks to Baman Irani, President-elect Credai, and Chairman and MD at Rustamji. They discuss the concept of buy versus rent and how to approach buying property in 2022. On Cock and Bull, Cyrus is joined by Meghnath and comedian Shad Shafi. They discuss their opinions on the ongoing Congress presidential elections and Prashant Kishore embarking on a padyatra. On The Life Manifesto, Zarina narrates a story that advocates that stress and emotions are not to be controlled but must be beautifully managed. And on the Filter Coffee podcast, Karthik is joined by Yashraj Akashi, senior ambassador of the TEDx program and curator of TEDx Gateway. They discuss the origin story of TED and its franchise model. guys, go to our website, ivmpodcast.com. You can check out the merch store. Also links to all of our social media stuff, which is at IVM Podcast. Also, do check out our YouTube channels. We have a number of channels with many of your favorite shows available as full video podcasts. Finally, we'd like to thank our sponsors this week, Volvo XC40 Recharge, Bumble, Heads Up for Tails, and HDFC Mutual Fund. Thank you so much for making this possible.
Do you often find yourself surrounded by conversations about Web3, blockchain, NFTs, DAOs? What are these terms and how do they affect our future on the internet? So many questions, but don't worry, we've got answers to all your questions. Hi, I'm Eklavya Bhattacharya, and on our show, Future Proofing, we try to decode the impact of these future technologies on various industries with experts and tech enthusiasts. Tune into new episodes coming out every Thursday on the IVM Podcast app and the website, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Working Monday to Friday, glued to your chair, making you feel dull? Worry not. Get your 5-minute weekly dose of travel around the world with Postcards from Nowhere. Join me every Thursday as I explore the strange, obscure, and fascinating parts of the world and bring out facets of travel you may not have thought of before. You can find us on the IVM Podcast app, website, or wherever you get your podcast from.